Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan anila nijonego shavotya, nijonego shavotya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Way. Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
On the drum, Young Grey Horse, off their Kenyon Records CD entitled Powwow Songs Recorded Live in Browning. The name of that song was Women's Fancy Dance. This dance originated in the early 1950s and 1960s, when young women wanted a style different from the more calm and gentle traditional dances. Women fancy dancers wear a long fringe shawl, leggings, and moccasins that together create a beautiful color scheme. The intricate movements of the woman's dancer is meant to resemble the flight of a butterfly. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kitishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast is entitled Climate Change and Energy Justice, a conversation with three youth activists. This is Program 3 of our Wolf Mountain Radio interview series. Yat Kitishi Native Center, like many indigenous peoples throughout the world, have long been speaking out about the many serious problems impacting Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. Humanity is living during a critical time in our planet's history. This is why our Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices programs focus on many important global issues that need serious attention. Today's broadcast highlights the critical issues of global climate change, environment, and energy justice. Today's program is a conversation with three young women who are working for a better world. My program guests are Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams. The dedication of these three persons exemplify youth activism. It is young people like them that give me hope for the future and energizes me to continue my activism. Yat Kitishi Native Center has been very concerned about global climate change and energy justice for many years. Yat Kitishi Native Center networks with many campaigns, organizations, and projects that are involved in climate energy issues. The interconnections of cultural, social, economic, and environmental justice as it relates to climate and energy issues is a major focus of Yat Kitishi Native Center's work. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, indigenous peoples have tried for many years to warn the international community about many serious ecological issues, especially global climate change and abusive energy development. Exploitation of energy resources have greatly impacted Native peoples throughout the globe. The history of colonization and now globalization has been fueled from the greed of energy development. Indigenous peoples have made numerous declarations about climate change at various international forums, such as at the United Nations and to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. A Native woman, Sheila Watt Cloutier, former chairperson of the Inuit Circumpolar Council, an international organization of indigenous peoples of the Arctic, shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former U.S. Vice President Al Gore for their work on global climate issues. In 1998, as a journalist, I attended a national climate conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico, hosted by NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. This NASA summit was special and historic in that many Native peoples were invited to present testimony. The Albuquerque Declaration and Native Peoples, Native Homelands Climate Change Report entitled Circle of Wisdom is an important reference. There have been many other international declarations by indigenous peoples on climate, such as Carioca at the UN Conference on Environment and Development, in Quito, Ecuador, in Lyon, France, at The Hague, Netherlands, in Milan, Italy, in Kyoto, Japan, in Bonn, Germany, in Nakuru, Kenya, Africa, at the Indigenous Nationalities of the Amazon, Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change in Anchorage, Alaska, are important examples. Unfortunately, the wisdoms and knowledge of Indigenous peoples about climate change is a voice that is still not respected enough by governments, industry, and the world citizenry that seems to ignore anthropogenic global climate impacts. A priority of Yadkiddishi Native Center's involvement in the climate and energy justice movement is encouraging student and youth activism. We do so locally at Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor. As an ecologist and community activist, I also participate in various student and youth organized conferences, projects, and protests on climate, energy, environment, and sustainability issues. I am proud to say that Yadkiddishi Native Center has and continues to encourage and mentor young people to become involved in these issues. Today's three Wolf Mountain Radio program guests, Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams, recently visited Yadkiddishi Native Center to talk about the 2009 Florida Power Shift Climate and Energy Conference we all are going to attend. Power Shift is a national campaign of more than 303,000 young people calling for bold, serious action on climate and energy. Power Shift is a project of the Energy Action Coalition. EAC was founded in June 2004 to unite a diversity of organizations in an alliance that supports and strengthens the students and youth clean, just, and renewable energy movement. Power Shift is known for mobilizing thousands of students and youth to rally in Washington, D.C., to pressure the White House and Congress for a strong and comprehensive climate and energy plan. Power Shift's goal is for U.S. energy policy that creates a renewable energy economy with millions of new green jobs, ends dependence on dirty, polluting energy, brings America security, protects the environment, and reduces harmful global climate change pollution. The work of the Energy Action Coalition is so timely in view of the upcoming Global Climate Treaty Conference in Copenhagen, Denmark. Yadkiddishi Native Center urges our listeners to become active in climate and energy issues. Consider joining Power Shift. Sign their petition against dirty tricks by the fossil fuel energy companies and their lobbyists. Urge President Obama and members of Congress to create safe, clean, renewable energy and climate policy. Participate in regional conferences, statewide symposiums, and local events in support of energy, environment, and climate justice actions. There are many fine organizations like EAC that will welcome your involvement. Remember, think globally and act locally. In 2006, I participated in a Florida statewide meeting of college students guided by EAC's Campus Climate Challenge to encourage universities to invest in renewable energy. Florida Gulf Coast University, where I am a lecturer and curriculum advisor, has signed the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. FGCU is also constructing a 2-megawatt solar energy project on campus, which will reduce FGCU's use of polluting fossil fuel energy. I generally support this alternative energy project. However, the 16-acre solar field has generated much controversy that you heard about previously in my conversation with my three program guests. Institutions of higher education must show leadership on energy, environment, and climate issues. Greening of college campuses by reducing, reusing, and recycling should become a priority. It should be standard practice for colleges to conserve more energy and utilize safe, clean, and renewable energy technologies. Reducing a school's ecological footprint will save money. It also will be an example to society of how communities can create a healthier and sustainable future. An example of this is USBGC, LEED Certified Energy and Environment Design Buildings. A good example is FGCU's Demonstration and Learning Center's Green Building Project that is nearing construction. Green Building incorporates a number of important key concepts in design, construction, and maintenance. These include energy efficiency, passive design, recycled and renewable building materials, water usage, waste management, healthy indoor environment, and landscaping that protects and restores the site by planting native vegetation, which can be habitat for wildlife. The green building will showcase sustainable building standards and practices. Importantly, it will serve as a training center for engineering students and the construction industry. Universities as centers of education and research must also promote energy and environmental sustainability by their academic mission. Curriculums must include critical energy, environment, and climate issues. Courses must be interdisciplinary so that students learn about the serious global problems we are now faced with. Florida Gulf Coast University's Center for Environment and Sustainability Education, where I serve as a member of the center's Board of Advisors, pedagogy is focused on ecological literacy and planetary citizenship for a sustainable and peaceful future through scholarship, education, and action. Florida Gulf Coast University's 9 student goals and outcomes exemplify the type of education needed for the 21st century. Mandy, Angela, and Amanda, after eating some cornbread I baked, agreed to share their views on climate, energy, environment, and sustainability issues here on Wolf Mountain Radio. I now present a brief background on each guest. Mandy Hancock is a Florida campus organizer for the Southern Energy Network's Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. A group of us activists in Florida have worked with Mandy in establishing the Florida Safe and Sustainable Energy Campaign, primarily to fight nuclear power issues in Florida. Mandy is a smart and sincere person. Angela Cisneros is a student at Florida Gulf Coast University and a Southwest Florida community activist. Angela is president of FGCU's campus group, the Progressive Student Alliance. She also is a board member of EPEC, the Environment and Peace Education Center, a local grassroots group. Angela and I have worked together on important socioeconomic environmental justice issues, such as farm worker justice. I am proud to be her friend. Amanda Adams is a student at Florida Gulf Coast University. As an environmental studies major, Amanda is active in environmental and sustainability issues on campus. Interested in agriculture and food issues, she is coordinating a backyard farmers project. As I welcome Mandy, Angela, and Amanda to Wolf Mountain Radio, I wish to read a statement from the Earth Charter, which I think exemplifies a philosophy my 3 guests and I believe in. Quote, in the midst of a magnificent diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one Earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace, unquote. Ladies, thank you for visiting Yad Kadishi Native Center. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Hello, my name is Mandy Hancock with Southern Energy Network. I'm the Florida organizer working primarily on nuclear justice issues.
Hi, my name is Amanda Adams. I live in Naples, Florida, and I attend Florida Gulf Coast University. I'm part of the Student Government Environmental Initiatives Committee and also the president of an organization called the Backyard Farmers, trying to start gardens on campus to help with our climate change problem.
Hello, my name is Angela Cisneros. I'm from Naples, Florida, senior at Florida Gulf Coast University, co-director of the Progressive Student Alliance.
The critical issues confronting Mother Earth, such as climate change and energy, can be very overwhelming and even depressing when one understands how serious of a crisis our planet is facing. It seems most of the political, industrial, and financial powers of society, which are predominantly the older generation, are not yet willing to seriously deal with global threats of climate change. The older generation do not seem to care about a just, safe, clean, renewable, and sustainable energy future. EAC's Power Shift Alliance of Youth Activists gives me some hope that your generation cares about protecting what's left of the environment, as well as creating a better and more just global society. What is your perspective about your generation's concern for Mother Earth? Do you feel many young people are involved enough?
So far, what I've noticed is that there is just a small group of us that are really trying to fight all these different issues. We're actually taking on a lot for the few amount of people that we are. At FGCU in particular, there's a group of maybe 10 of us that are usually pretty active on a day-to-day basis that are taking on social justice issues, environmental justice issues, and trying to fight the school itself on certain issues. And it has been very hard to engage other students to get involved. We've been trying to do advertisements and flyers, and we've tried to talk to different courses and inform them on what's going on in the whole United States. And in particular, we just had a sustainability week this week. There were very minimal amount of students that showed up. There were some faculty and staff that came out to support us, but it was mostly just preaching to the choir, as it usually is at our school. We had a very hard time getting students to show up, so it was a little disappointing. We're going to keep trying, though, keep trying to engage students and see what happens.
What Amanda is saying is certainly something that I also see as well, and that's why I think it's so important to educate people in our community, not just on the campus.
I definitely echo what Amanda and Angela are saying. It was the same when I was on campus in South Georgia, and it seemed that the only people that cared was the really small clique of environmental students. And then as folks got more involved in these regional conferences and really feeding off the energy of other students, once you start networking campuses with other campuses, it really builds the energy and really builds the momentum. And there are campus groups that have 100 plus people at their meetings. So, you know, y'all are a relatively small school, so you may not get the 100 plus people. I think you totally can. But I really see that the things that y'all are doing to educate your fellow students is really impacting the level of awareness on campus, and I see you building momentum.
The next topic I want to now highlight is intergenerational exchange. It is important for everyone to appreciate, respect, learn from, and support all age groups of people who are concerned about the future well-being of all life on Mother Earth. This subject is critical if we are to share a common vision for the climate change and energy justice movement. Activists who have been involved for many years have great insights and experiences to share with young people. However, it is also important for long-time activists to listen, learn, and encourage youth activism in a way that is not overbearing or condescending. Young people, likewise, must become more sensitive about how to relate to older people. Intergenerational exchange must also honestly address cultural, economic, gender, geographical, racial, and social differences among people of different ages and backgrounds. This is the focus of a workshop on intergenerational organizing for environmental justice that Angela and I have been asked to host at the upcoming 2009 Florida Power Shift Conference. As you, Mandy, Angela, and Amanda as well as many of our Wolf Mountain Radio listeners know, an important priority of mine is empowering young people to become engaged in progressive movements. This is why Yaikidishi Native Center networks with various student and youth organizations such as Power Shift. I hope my many years of experience as an activist will help guide your generation as the upcoming leaders of the 21st century. Mandy is one of the organizers of Florida Power Shift 09. You and I previously have talked about this important topic of intergenerational movement building. Would you please comment on this subject?
Well, I definitely think that it's important and that it can be a reciprocal relationship in what we have to learn from one another. There are definitely a lot of practices that came in as far as just organizing social movement in general from the generations before us and what may be our parents or some of us, our grandparents' generations, organizing for social justice and change and civil rights and any of those things, the 8-hour workday, women's, all these different things, even the people that aren't around to teach us verbally, we have things behind to read and learn from them, like people that organize around ending slavery and lynching and all of these wonderful accounts that we have of people that really took difficult issues and turned around the dominant ideologies that supported those awful practices. Well, here we are with what I consider to be a civil rights issue for us all, because our very viability on this planet is being threatened, you know, the basic resources that we need to live. And getting together that wealth of knowledge and experience, you can't beat out experience by anything. The people that have the experience and know how to organize, we have to learn from them. But I also think that the youth bring something that's a little innovative. We are very organized. We have very structured ways of communicating. We're getting much better at facilitating meetings and really recognizing power dynamics within the meetings and creating space for people to speak that may not feel empowered to speak, and really cutting off those that don't stop speaking, which I can be sometimes. But really, you know, taking some of the things that we've learned about facilitating our time and using it as impactfully as we can, thinking as strategically as we can, really always maintaining sight of your goals and being sure that you're working towards those things. Those are all things that I think are going to win this. And not to say that the older generations don't get those things, because I think that a lot of them do, but there is sometimes a disconnect in the way we approach issues. And I think that the young people need to respect those that came before them, and the older people need to respect those that are coming after them. And if we can really build that coalition between those generations, I think that's what we need to win this fight.
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks with guts defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us, and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail.
So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail, Justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Music from singer-songwriter Ann Feeney off her CD entitled Have You Been to Jail for Justice? That song was the title track. Ann Feeney performs at many events and protests. She gifted me this CD at the First Student Farmworker Alliance in Immokalee and Quintro in support of the Coalition of Immokalee Farmworkers. Ann also shared her music at a Florida Gulf Coast University Progressive Student Alliance monthly potluck. Yad Kiddushin Native Center urges Wolf Mountain Radio listeners to visit her website, www.annfeeney.com, where you can purchase her CDs and see her touring schedule. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushin Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's broadcast focuses on climate change and energy justice. In the studio are three fine young women, Mandy Hancock, Angela Cisneros, and Amanda Adams. We all share the same energy and environmental concerns for the future well-being of all life on Mother Earth. Mandy is a Florida organizer with the Southern Energy Network's Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. She works to motivate college students to become involved with climate change energy issues. Angela Cisneros is a Florida Gulf Coast University student and community activist. She is president of FGCU's Progressive Student Alliance and a board member of a Southwest Florida group, the Environment and Peace Education Committee, EPEC. Amanda Adams is a Florida Gulf Coast University student. Majoring in environmental studies, she is also interested in agriculture and food sustainability issues, coordinating the Backyards Farmers Project. In today's program introduction, I spoke about the importance of universities becoming green institutions in order to reduce and minimize their ecological impacts to their area. USGB LEED certified energy and environment design, construction and maintenance buildings that incorporate sustainability standards must become common practice. The operations of a university must likewise be energy efficient and environmentally sensitive. This means vendors and their goods and services must also be as green and socially responsible as possible. One example many students are concerned about are college campus food service corporations such as Aramark, Compass, and Sodexo. Many companies that contract with universities can be influenced to be more green in their practices, since a large percentage of a college's revenue is from student tuition. However, one must always keep in mind that universities are a big business. Their profit motive can often overshadow their need to be ecologically and socially responsible. Many institutions of higher learning are better at portraying an image of being environmentally and socially caring than actually doing what their public relations departments advertise. Angela, FGCU's Progressive Student Alliance, which you co-chair, is trying to encourage Florida Gulf Coast University to walk their talk. Would you please comment on this?
Well, first of all, if universities are becoming more and more like businesses, then we are the consumers and we decide what happens on campus. Right now, the Progressive Student Alliance is supporting the initiatives of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, One Penny More Per Pound campaign. The Progressive Student Alliance is operating as the Student Farm Worker Alliance, and we're pressuring our university to take a position on the issue, and the issue is tomato pickers in Florida are being exploited. Are we going to keep supporting that system of exploitation by letting Aramark Corporation it's a large corporation. It's a food service provider for universities, hospitals, high schools, et cetera, here in the United States. So they have a lot of purchasing power, and they demand low prices for bulk tomatoes. And the majority of tomatoes, especially during the winter season, which coincides with university semesters, the fall and the spring, Aramark right now at our university, their contract is up. So this is an opportunity for us to pressure our administrators to do the right thing and to support the Coalition of Immokalee Workers by publicly aligning themselves with them and telling Aramark, hey, if you don't do this, if you don't do the right thing, then we're not going to renew your contract. Recently, Compass, another food service provider like Aramark, has agreed to the demands of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. So if Compass can do it, why can't Aramark?
My next topic deals with an important energy source that already exists, but is not appreciated enough. I'm talking about recoverable energy through conservation and energy efficiency. In the 1980s, as an environmental intern at the University of Maine, my alma mater, I hosted two symposiums focused on energy. The keynote speaker at the first forum was the nationally respected ecologist, Dr. Barry Commoner. The other keynote speaker at the second distinguished lecture was physicist Amory Lovins, one of the world's leading experts on energy sustainability. Dr. Lovins' early book, Soft Energy Paths, is still an important publication available from his Rocky Mountain Institute. Dr. Commoner and Dr. Lovins' premise is that society wastes a lot of energy, which can be recovered by recycling and reusing lost power. In addition, designing more energy-efficient agricultural practices, buildings, equipment, industrial production systems, modes of transportation, and many of the products we use in daily life will provide the energy we need without having to develop more toxic, polluting, centralized energy sources such as oil, coal, natural gas, oil shale, tar sands, or nuclear. Protecting our planet from further devastating climate impacts and creating a safe, clean, and financially equitable energy economy can be achieved through what is now called alternative energy sources, such as conservation, solar, wind, geothermal, and ocean current renewable technologies. Mandy, would you please comment on this topic?
Well, right now, with technologies that are currently existing, we can implement enough efficiency practices to reduce our need for electricity by 20%. And if you look at a lot of the rate growth expectations for many of the states in our region and beyond, you'll see that that very closely mirrors what they're expecting our increased need to be. A quote that I've heard from someone that I work with is, the cleanest kilowatt hour is one that's never used. And so not only are you looking at conservation to prevent the need for all this extra energy, but you're looking at the impacts of that energy when it's burned, just preventing all of that altogether by saving it. Not only through efficiency and increasing, you know, the efficiency of our homes and our buildings and all of that, but also conserving. Well, there's a reason why reduce is the first word in the phrase reduce, reuse, recycle, because it's all about reducing the amount of goods that we consume and the amount, and hence the amount of goods that we would dispose of and throw away. The same is true for our energy. We want to reduce the amount of energy that we're using in order to prevent the construction of more coal-fired power plants and new nuclear reactors. right now the technology exists for us to decrease our energy consumption by 20% just through efficiency practices. If you couple that with personal conservation and really educating the public on reducing their energy consumption, not leaving their television on for their dogs to watch when they're gone all day, and not leaving their air conditioner set on 72 degrees when they're on vacation for a week so it'll be cool when they get home, you know, not only are we helping to clean up our environment, but we're also saving those people money, which is also true in the business world. A lot of people think that if we try to reduce our energy consumption, that we're going to negatively impact our ability to produce goods and keep our economy going. But that's simply not the case, because we are still going to be producing and using things. We just need to do it in a much more efficient way, whether it's through our general consumption of foods and whatever, making conscientious decisions about how much energy was put into those things being produced, but also at home with our lights, with our air conditioner, with our personal decisions, our vehicles, riding more bicycles, you know, just in general, using less natural resources.
Mandy, Angela, and Amanda, I want to sincerely thank the three of you for all the hard work you do in trying to create a better world. I also appreciate your willingness to be my guests on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. As we're nearing the end of our interview time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Radio, the last subject I want to at least mention is the issue of how the private business sector's political and economic power dominate climate, energy, and environmental policy. Multinational energy companies, banking and financial institutions, the mining industry, and power utilities dictate and control what source and price the public pays for energy. Greed for corporate profits have for many years sabotaged the development of safe, clean, affordable, and renewable energy that will protect our biosphere and benefit all of society. What's worse, the excessive consumptive use of energy by people in the affluent, industrialized, developed nations at the expense of the less developed third world countries of the global south is a crime against humanity and the planet. Huge corporations like ExxonMobil, Bank of America, Peabody Coal, and Florida Power and Light produce excellent advertisements whose public relations greenwashing create an image of an environmentally concerned and socially responsible company working for a better world. Their dishonest business practices and deception campaigns have caused devastating human health and ecological impacts throughout the globe. This is most evident in Native American and in Indigenous peoples' communities throughout the world. This is the focus of many of our Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices radio programs. What I am talking about is economic globalization that is choking the lifeblood out of Mother Earth and therefore the survival of all life now and for future generations. Would any of you like to briefly speak to this?
I think that some corporations have made some strides in trying to be more socially and environmentally just, but I feel as though the bulk of them, particularly the multinational corporations, are only looking at the bottom line as far as profit is concerned. When someone else introduced this phrase to me, and I can't give them the credit, but we need to start looking at the triple bottom line and looking at not only profit margins and monetary aspects, but the social and environmental implications of whatever we're producing and using. I feel like a lot of the corporations that speak, that they talk the game and they're saying the right things, that they're just greenwashing, because in the end, all they want to do is make as much money as they possibly can with as little investment as they can possibly get away with, and shoving off as much of the external costs onto us as they possibly can. And that seems to me like a consumer dictatorship, where we are being thrown a bunch of useless crap that we don't need and being told that that our economy and our livelihood is dependent upon us consuming this useless crap to continue enjoying the level of comfort that we have with our disposable lifestyles. So mostly I think it's greenwashing, and I don't know if you all have ever heard of Riot Folk. I believe they came down and did a workshop last year, and they sing a song called Dancing on the Ruins of a Multinational Corporation, and I'll have to say that that song brings good feelings to me, because I think that the multinational corporations, particularly when going into what is now called the Global South, or maybe called developing nations, third world nations, it's basically called the Global South to really insinuate that hierarchy that's been established between developed nations and developing nations, and how we are depending on completely exploiting the environs and the peoples of those countries in order to maintain this unhealthy and wholly unsustainable lifestyle and economy that we've created.
Something that's related to the talk of the multinational corporation is the power that people can take. I think that people really need to realize that we are empowered, and that we can dictate what we want to the multinational corporations. We can vote with our pocketbook. The places that we spend our money are really what decide which companies survive and which fail in this country and around the world. So we really need to educate ourselves on where we spend our money and what those companies do around the world and what their practices are, and maybe start spending more money on companies that use sustainable practices and that treat their workers fairly.
It's important for each person to talk to anyone that you can, your family, your friends, and at least, at the very least, inform them.
Yard, cows in the field, in a Pennsylvania town, it's another day. But at Three Mile Island, something was wrong. In the power plant, not 2 miles away, a valve jammed open, and the holding tanks blew, and the leak spread for miles around. With a bubble of hydrogen trapped under the dome, that plant damn near melted down. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Metro Edison said one thing, feds the reverse. The TV and press had their fun. Out of all the confusion, just one thing came through. No one knew what the hell was going on. Evacuation would have ended the game, so they said there was no reason to go. But they didn't say too much about workers at the plant, who has always caught the brunt of the blow. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Sun it shines, the wind it blows, there's a thousand different ways to save fuel. So when some corporation tells me we got no choice, they might as well be calling me a fool. They say the system worked and no one was killed. They say they'll make them safer than before. But they're gambling with our children, and they're gambling with the world. Their money don't seem worth dying for. 3 Mile Island blew down their lives. Next time it happens, how many will die? Got our eyes on the future, got our feet on the ground. Gonna shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down. Shut down the nukes, shut them down.
You are listening to Yatkidichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidichi Native Center program station identification was from the band Atomic Cafe. The name of that song was 3 Mile Island. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, in March 28, 1979, a reactor cooling malfunction in a Babcock and Wilcox pressurized water reactor caused a partial core meltdown of TMI Unit 2. This atomic generating station, operated by Metropolitan Edison, is considered to be the most serious commercial nuclear power accident in American history. Despite the disinformation and cover-up campaign by the utility, by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and by the state of Pennsylvania, dangerous radiation was released into the community and natural environment. It is important to note that throughout the world, there have been many major nuclear power plant accidents from 1952 to the present. There also have been and continue to be numerous violations of the International Atomic Energy Agency and regulatory agencies of those countries that have nuclear power, such as the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Remember, it's better to be active today than radioactive tomorrow. Yatkidichi Native Center encourages everyone to get involved in the global movement of people concerned about climate change, energy, and environmental justice. There are many fine campaigns and organizations like PowerShift that will welcome your involvement. To learn more about PowerShift, visit www.powershift09.org. Please listen next time for Program 4 of Wolf Mountain Radio's special series, Climate Change and Energy Justice. We shall conclude today's program with a flute song by Lakota musician Tokeya Inajin, Kevin Locke, off his Mekoshe music CD entitled Open Circle. The song we will hear is entitled Hoop Dancer. This dance creates various designs with colored hoop rings. One special image is all the hoops form a circle to resemble Mother Earth. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawan Tarkusin, to all of our relations. Thank you.
Hey, hey, hey.